Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, this afternoon they're going to be the views of our special guest, Joel Skousen from World Affairs Brief. Hi, Joel. How are you doing today?
I'm just fine, Dr. Stan. It's good to be with you.
Well, it's always good to have you here. Well, tell us what the latest issues are that you're addressing in the World Affairs Brief.
Well, this week's World Affairs Brief is going to concentrate, first of all, on the economy, which is of great concern to a lot of your listeners. My lead story is going to be that selective companies are benefiting from the Fed slush funds. Open market intervention by the Fed and other central banks has exceeded $400 billion since August 8th, Dr. Stan. $400 billion. The European Central Bank alone has pumped in more than $200 billion, so this is not just a U.S. problem. The economy, of course, is riddled with debt, wants desperately to come down to reality, but the Fed is trying to make sure that doesn't happen, at least quickly. Every day, the interveners pump money into the markets to produce buy signals, while skittish investors take advantage of the brief uptick in prices, you know, to dump stocks and get their money out. So the seesaw between ups and downs in stocks continues daily. How long can the Fed keep priming the pump? Well, and another good question is, who gets the money first? Even if the Fed succeeds in calming the markets this time around, the threat of collapse will always be high in the future because reinflating a bubble only postpones the inevitable. Now, whether the Fed succeeds or fails, the result is going to be inflationary either way, even if we have a recession. It's called stagflation when you have stagnation in the economy but you still have rising prices. That's because the government is trying to pump money in, which keeps, at least a portion of the economy in cash. Now, the money spent on this debt is, bad debts anyway, is already gone. It isn't coming back. So the Fed is merely filling up the voids with new money to keep the balloon from totally deflating. And I think the long-term goal is to stave off the collapse until it can happen naturally, that is, catastrophically, under the cover of a future world war, where blame can be averted to the new aggressors of the world rather than on the fiat money that we've been dealing with for so many years.
Well, I fear that you're right, and there's no question at all we're headed for a collapse just like they had in Japan that 17 years ago. And, you know, it's just amazing to see. It's like deja vu all over again.
Well, you know, the Bill Jamison of the Scotsman had a fairly cogent commentary. He said, the great policy dilemma at the Fed since 2004 has been how to decouple or isolate mortgage lending from the low interest rate era of the low interest rate era to prevent yet another asset bubble from being created, this time in residential property. He says that to the consternation of the Fed, a mortgage lending and property bubble is exactly what resulted. Well, I think that was clearly inevitable. That wasn't anything that was unexpected to the Fed. They simply have got only one weapon left, and that's inflation, and they're using it. Estimates of losses on poor quality lending now stands on Bernanke's own reckoning at $100 billion. Other estimates range up to $300 billion. Now, isn't that interesting, though? They've had to pour $400 billion into the markets in less than a month to cover what may be $100 to $300 billion, bad loans. That shows that these loans are highly leveraged within the markets and that it takes that much to stop the markets from panicking.
And, of course, the other thing is, although we've lost a few hedge funds, what if they really start coming down? And then what about the derivatives that are backing them that ensure that nobody's going to lose any money? I mean, certainly the derivatives are going to have to come up with money and Chase, certainly J.P. Morgan Chase and the Bank of America are some of the biggest holders of derivatives. I think we're in for a wild ride. I don't think most people realize how bad things really are. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, And our special guest this afternoon is Joel Skousen from the World Affairs Brief. And, of course, we're covering briefly what is going to be covered for the World Affairs Brief for this week. And Joel has simply been talking about the economy. And is there anything else you'd like to say in covering, of course, the current economic crisis?
Yes, I've got a lot more here, Dr. Stan.
You go right ahead, then.
Shockwaves have even extended to Wall Street insider investment firms like Goldman Sachs, which announced last week it was pumping $2 billion into one of its struggling hedge funds. Of course, we know where they get the $2 billion, part of this slush fund that the Fed makes available. Goldman Sachs is part of the plunge protection team, so they've got first dibs on that money. You know, BNP Paribas, Frank's largest bank, froze funds last week because they were heavily invested in troubled mortgage markets. The worry is that it appears to let wild hedge funds and leveraged private equity promoters off the hook while keeping the screws on U.S. households and consumer lending and spending. Not only the screws, all this is inflationary, Dr. Stan, which means our buying power is going to go down tremendously in the next few years because of all this money being pumped into the economy. These people who get the money first get to buy at existing prices. We who get it trickle down don't get to buy until prices have already arisen.
And, of course, the idea that we have a 2% inflation rate or maybe a 4%, you know, if you take in food and fuel, they're simply lying to us. I mean, certainly anybody who looks around knows the inflation rate's much higher than they're telling us.
That's right. It's running 10 to 12%. So we're in double-digit inflation rates. So any long-term mortgages you get for 8% and under, even though the interest rate is fairly heavy at 8%, still a bargain compared to the actual interest rate. You know, whenever Wall Street attaches the moniker too big to fail or too important to fail to a company, it's a signal that the establishment insiders are preparing to justify another bailout. And that's what happened this week. This week's recipient was Countrywide Financial, the nation's largest mortgage lender, which ran out of cash this week. The New York Post ran a headline saying the government's intervention plunge protection team is on the job. Fortune magazine described Wall Street as bailout city. But Business Week asked the really cogent question and said, did Countrywide get a hand from the Fed? Well, that hand came through Bank America. Bank America was the sugar daddy that bailed out Countrywide, pumping $2 billion into the near moribund company. And Wall Street and Business Week was asking, in essence, Bank of America fronting for the powers that be. Well, I believe it was.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel is simply saying that there are certain favored companies that are getting all this money that's put out in the slush fund by the Fed, and Goldman Sachs got a couple of billion dollars, and Countrywide, of course, which is one of the nation's largest lenders, and certainly for loans, apparently had gotten a significant amount of money this week after it ran out of money, and certainly it's trying to get, I mean, they were talking about getting $11 or $12 billion this week. And so what happened as far as Countrywide was concerned, Joel?
Well, you know, this bailout was not done on the basis of sound economics. Countrywide's CEO, Arm Mazzillo, and if you look at pictures of Mazzillo, you'll see this is about as mafia-looking person as I've ever seen in my life. Bank of America, he said, its investment in Countrywide represents a vote of confidence and strengthens our balance sheet, enabling us to position Countrywide for future growth and success. Well, indeed it does. Countrywide shares jumped more than 20% from a low of 15 up to $26 in after-hour trading. Once again, this is a very interesting question. Who do you think gets permission to trade after hours? Well, it's not you and me, Dr. Stan.
That's for sure.
That's real insider trading. That stock uptick was a direct result of the bailout and represents another side of intervention other than, you know, the window opening, discount window at the Fed. Kenneth D. Lewis of Bank of America's chairman and CEO tried to justify this bailout said, the turmoil in the stock market has led some to underestimate the value of Countrywide's operations and assets. Really? In truth, Countrywide's assets are grossly overvalued, not undervalued, just like all the other mortgage lenders who created the subprime categories and marketed them to the world. But Bank of America is not the only insider bank in the U.S. that is helping to bail out numerous large international corporations connected with government. All the big international bankers have insider dealings with the Fed and the Plunge Protection Team. Now, the Plunge Protection Team is a hidden Wall Street government working group, that's how they call themselves, a working group, that intervenes in the markets using Fed money and credit. And they try to, then when the market responds and goes up, they try to withdraw that credit and money back out through the bond market and by redeeming bonds and try to pull the money back out. But it doesn't always work that way. They're probably not going to pull this money back out, and that's why it's going to be inflationary. The UK Independent described these team players working in harmony. Citigroup said it was pleased to inject liquidity into the financial system during times of market stress. Well, no one is pleased to throw away billions into the market unless it's created out of nothing on their behalf. In other words, they're pleased to throw someone else's money at the market, and it's eventually the taxpayers' money because we're going to pay through the inflation tax. And in a joint statement, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, and Wachovia said they believed it is, quote, important at this time to take leadership role in demonstrating the potential value of the Fed's primary credit facility and to encourage others to use it. Well, they're certainly doing that by offering this cheap money to everyone who's in trouble, but first and foremost to the primary people.
And I think that what people don't understand is that inflation destroys the value of the savings of everybody listening to this program, the pensions, the bonds, the CDs, the annuities. Everything we have that is tied to the dollar is being progressively and systematically and, in my opinion, intentionally destroyed as we move to impoverish the American people through the ravages of inflation. Of course, the Fed was created to guarantee a stable currency back in 1913. Well, so far they've lost 96% of the value of our currency, and if we let them continue, they're going to lose 100%, and we will end up being impoverished in the land we inherited from our forefathers.
Well, you know, while this appears to be the imminent threat, it is still my opinion, Dr. Stan, that their intent is not to impoverish us yet. The intent is to keep everyone fat, dumb, and happy, and that is why they are pumping money like crazy. They do not want this to expose the evils of deficit financing and credit. They want to deficit spend. They do not want to put the government in hard times or have the public demand that we stop government spending, which is what is creating all of these bubbles. And the reason they didn't want to stop deficit spending is because otherwise they'd have to tax people for these wars. They would become very unpopular if the American people had to start to pay $3,000 a year to pay for them. It would demand an immediate pullout, and they are shielding the American people from the effects of all of this government spending and warmongering around the world.
And I think it's important that people understand we're doing it all on borrowed money. That's what we did in Vietnam. We've just borrowed the money, and that's what we're doing today, to the tune of, you know, at least $500 billion a year. Unbelievable.
Yeah. And that's what's interesting is that debt is now being viewed as assets. In other words, they just create debt, and they are marketing that debt as if it were cold, hard cash. And people are accepting that debt because the federal government stands behind it, meaning U.S. taxpayers. Well, there is no way that this government or our nation or its taxpayers is ever going to be able to pay back this debt. Never. Now, that would destroy the economy if that were let out. Now, that's why I believe, and it's very reasonable, my long-term general theory says that they're going to merge this debt liquidation with war. That is, they're going to let the next upcoming world war, which is going to be attacking the United States, is going to be the target. And that's going to instantly destroy the markets and the debt. And our government will have every excuse to walk away and say, well, we've been destroyed militarily as a country, and it'll take us years to respond, so don't expect to ever get repaid. And that's what's going to happen to the debt. I don't believe it's going down completely until war, though they may have a real trouble holding this together. This is going to be increasingly difficult for them to manipulate this economy, because at the other end of the spectrum, if they throw out too much money, they're going to break the 80% support level of the dollar. And if they break that, they could see a run on the dollar, and that could be devastating as well. So they've got to play this very carefully.
Well, I think it, I think, you know, the fact that the central banks of the world have put out not quite, but almost $500 billion, you know, in the last 2 weeks just to try to keep this thing from falling apart reveals how frightened they are at the implications of what's going on. What did they put out about? Is it about, what, about $400 billion that they put out so far?
Yes, that's correct. And it's going towards five.
Right. Well, that's $500 billion. You know, $1 trillion here, $1 trillion there. Pretty soon you're talking about real money.
Who said that? Was that?
I think it was $1 billion here, $1 billion.
Yes,
there.
It was. In any case, you know, not everybody's getting this bailout, though. A Credit to Home Lenders holding company plans to shut down most of its business to survive the troubles in the home lending industry. Credited is cutting its workforce to 1,000 people from 2,600, closing 65 branches. The company will immediately stop taking applications for new home loans. No one's lending to them, and they can't afford, you know, to go through the processing, et cetera. So it's just basically shutting down so it can service the loans and, that they've already committed to finance. In like manner, Capital One, the major credit card issuer, said it will cut 1,900 jobs and take $860 million in tax charges for its Greenpoint mortgage unit, which it acquired when it paid $13 billion for North Fork Bank Corp last December, and it stopped making loans. So thus, we're in the midst of a massive flood of credit creation that is selectively going to the boys that play games with the government. The middle and little-sized companies will have to take their medicine, according to Bernanke, for jumping on the debt bandwagon that the Fed himself created. So the credit crunch will have made normal bankers skittish about making loans, even to regular customers. But, of course, for the largest international corporations, the loan window is still wide open. The huge British mining corporation Rio Tinto raised $40 billion to fund its acquisition of Alcon, the aluminum giant. They got 20 banks to underwrite that debt that was later sold on the financial markets, and in the process, they were 30% oversubscribed. That means there's plenty of money floating around out there to throw at sure deals, and the only sure deal now are people who are connected to government.
One of the things I noticed is that it's hard to get a smaller loan less than about $417,000, but if you want to get over a major loan over, you know, over $500,000 for a house, why, you can do, and you know, you have the money, you know, behind you, you have the income, why you don't have any difficulty getting the larger loans. It's the smaller loans that it's the little guys going to get hurt in this thing before it's all over.
And the part of that is because the banks don't want to be saddled with a bunch of little houses that are hard to market in a glut.
Right.
Whereas the big, expensive ones, they have good equity in those, and they can usually get out their money, especially when they require a sizable down from a client who has good finance and credit. You know, one of the things I want to comment on is Neil Irwin's Washington Post article this past week. He wrote a pandering piece on the virtues of Ben Bernanke's, quote, cautious, cerebral, and disciplined approach to the recent mortgage and debt crisis. Quote, in his view, if he had done more to address the concerns of Wall Street sooner, it would have had the effect of bailing out people who made bad bets and could have worsened the crisis. Now, I just don't get this, Dr. Stan. Are we to assume by this that what Bernanke is doing now is not bailing out people who made bad bets just because he waited a week to do so? But Irwin's worst and most egregious comment was on his sub-headline, which said, Bernanke acts quietly to carefully guard the economy. What hogwash.
They're panicking. You know, they're pouring out more and more and more money, and then they're cutting the federal loan rate, you know, doing anything to try to preserve this thing and keep it from falling apart. I mean, I'm sure these people are frightened to death at the implications of what's going on. But, of course, they can't let the American people know, and they have to keep telling us that everything's going to be fine, and they get Henry Paulson out there from the Secretary of the Treasury, from formerly with Goldman Sachs, saying, oh, everything's going to be just fine, a little difficulty here, but we have a strong economy, everything's going to be just great, and they're frankly not telling the truth. They don't know what's going to happen next, and they remember what happened when Japan fell apart, you know, back in 1990.
And how long it took them to recover in Japan.
Well, they still haven't recovered. That's the amazing
Not
thing.
Not fully, that's right.
We'll be back in just a moment with Jill Skousen. Joel, go right ahead.
You know, I just can't understand how Greenspan-Bernanke combo can be, you know, referred to as guardians of the economy when it's the Fed itself that caused the market imbalances in the first place. They, in fact, are only guardians of the corporate government collusion that we're dealing with. You know, one of the long-term problems with our economy was pointed out to me by a subscriber, Robert Gleason, Jr. He said, because yields from speculative endeavors have far exceeded productive investments, much of what is traded in the markets today is pure paper and has no intrinsic or residual asset value. Even the dot-com craze in the late 90s was symptomatic of the desire of investors to make a killing investing in money-making schemes rather than investing in actual production for the long term. And that craze, like multi-level marketing, hasn't really ended. It just keeps looking for new incarnations, new ways to do the same old thing. The latest and greatest speculative fever, of course, was built on debt and the marketing of debt instruments that are now uncollectible, hollow, and empty. So the realization is fast dawning on many less sophisticated traders who are now in panic mode and they want out. And the counterforce to wanting out is the increasing realization that inflation will eat you alive if you just stick your money in the bank. Real inflation is now, as we talked about, double digits. People will, for the foreseeable future, be caught between these two grinding forces, market instability and high inflation, forcing us to choose between higher returns at very high risk or guaranteed losses to inflation with temporary safety and government-insured banking accounts.
And I think one of the most interesting things is there's so many people now are going into Treasury bills or into Treasury bonds, thinking that this is safety, but, you know, when you're dealing with double-digit inflation and you're getting an interest rate of 4.5% or 5%, you're going behind, you know, 6 or 7% a year.
That's right. Absolutely. The only saving grace to that, and in fact, I'll have to admit that that's where I'm at, Dr. Stan. I'm out of the markets and into safe, undervalued, my money slowly being eaten away, but at least the principal's still going to be there, and it'll take longer to lose it than it will in one fell swoop in the market.
I hate to laugh, you know, but everything is so ridiculous, and I agree with you totally, and you're so much better informed than most people. Most people are just going to get eaten alive before this is over.
Well, you know, it also pays if you do have any substantial money to keep it in what I feel is commercial real estate tied to some of the safe bets, even in a recession, that is government tenants or medical tenants. Medical facilities will always be bailed out by the establishment. Or the other one are utilities or people or companies associated with utilities. They're relatively safe because the government has to keep funding those and making sure that they make a profit. So if you rent commercial type structures to those three groups, that's usually a fairly safe bet in terms of growing with the economy, both in terms of the principal appreciation and keeping a steady income coming in. But once again, it's very difficult to find those kinds of commercial buildings on less than $1 million in assets. So most people that we're speaking to in this audience don't have that kind of money. And the people who do are clueless about what's really coming up, and they're going to lose their shirts, I'm afraid. A lot of them are.
Well, of course, the major thing is just to get out of debt and just to get yourself in a defensive position and wait and watch and see.
Yes, that is a very good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. Certainly getting debt-free so that you're free from, relatively free from the monetary market is very, very important.
All right, hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Joel was simply saying that, you know, certainly the best place to be is in T-bills or in T-bonds, but they certainly are going to get maybe 4-4.5% there at the present time. You know, in fact, the interest rate is falling because so many people are jumping into the T-bills, so the cost of the T-bills is going up and the interest rate's going down. And then you're going to get eaten alive by inflation, but you'll be eaten alive a lot less rapidly if you're in T-bills than, you know, if you're in many other investments. So, you know, and then, of course, the other thing is get out of debt, and that's the most important thing. Because we're in for a difficult ride, and the average American really doesn't understand what's happening. So please go ahead, Joel.
Well, let's switch gears a little more, and I'm going to talk a little bit about there's a change coming up in the big global warming hoax, and that is that heretofore, from this in the past 2 years, the media has made this play as if nobody with any credentials at all, no rational scientist, disputes the global warming and also the proposition that it's man-made. And this isn't true. The backlash is significant now. All kinds of scientists coming out and saying, this is not true, it's a hoax. Much of this is documented by Dr. Art Robinson, Ph.D., who writes Access to Energy. Are you familiar with Art Robinson?
Yeah, he's a personal friend. In fact, we carry his educational programs and talk to him regularly.
That's right. Well, you know, he's one of the most incisive commentaries on science, the environment, and energy problems. He often comments on extensive scientific evidence that demonstrates that global warming is strictly a solar energy phenomenon, with almost no evidence of human causes. In the May issue, I caught a couple of things of his Access to Energy. He took time to instruct readers on how to discern between the best evidence based upon definitive experience and the manipulated evidence of less than honest scientists who are pushing a particular agenda, either a drug agenda or an environmental agenda or something. And, of course, the most common euphemism used by pseudoscientists and their media talking heads is the concept of mounting evidence for. You know, they just talk about a direction that everybody is saying that the evidence is pointing to. But Robinson says, this is why definitive experiments are so important. Mounting evidence for arguments provides shaky indications of trends in popular opinion. But truly definitive experiments are few and far between, and when they are there, the best that the manipulators can do is avoid them. Case in point, Jay Olerman reported in Science, April 2005, that on the lengths of 169 of the Earth's glaciers as a function of time over the past 300 years. Now, this is comprehensive. The most comprehensive survey on glacier disappearance in 300 years. He represents that this was an unbiased sample and provides analysis of many subsets, meaning special classes that critics like to bring up as exceptions, and he's got examples to meet all their exceptions. Robinson says, this glacier data definitively, without the slightest doubt, shows that the Earth has been warming since the Revolutionary War, and that increased atmospheric carbon dioxide was not the cause. It also directly shows that carbon dioxide has not caused glacier melting recently. Unless prepared to demonstrate that Orleman's data are wrong, no good scientist should permit himself to write any text to the contrary or otherwise convey an alternative view to the American people by any means. And that's typical Art Robinson. He's very straight shooting, very straightforward.
He's a great guy, really.
But here, this final statement is really interesting. He says people like James Hansen, he's the NASA scientist, the special in-group that controls the United Nations pronouncement, have so many resources at their disposal, they could not possibly be unaware of Orleman's report in the most widely read popular science journal in the United States. That, he says, they continue to ignore his statements and his data is a definitive reason that serious scientists should ignore them. And yet the media continues to propagate the myth that no serious scientist questions the proposition of man-made global warming.
And because all the evidence is on the other side, and and certainly if you stop and really analyze, you know that CO2 makes up, I think, 380 parts per million of the atmosphere. 330 parts per million. It's incredible that anybody would even suggest that this is the primary cause of global warming. And certainly, global warming started long before the CO2 increased. Well, the Earth goes through cycles. Why do they call Greenland Greenland? Why? Because it was green back in a thousand years ago when Leif Erikson was there. Don't get me started. Go ahead. We'll be back in just a moment with our special friend, Joel Skousen. But ladies and gentlemen, if indeed the global warming thesis is false, then it means, of course, that the entire media is aligned to tell you a lie, and I would like to suggest that it is. Certainly, 95% of our media are controlled by five mega corporations that have a vested interest in controlling what you read, what you hear, what you see, and ultimately what you believe. And most of it is a lie. Well, Joel, you go right ahead there.
Well, you know, nothing is more demonstrative, Dr. Stan, of the media panic over the increasing number of global warming critics than Newsweek magazine's recent article taking cheap shots at the opposition, talking about the deniers. It's like the Holocaust deniers, the global warming deniers. Newsweek claims that a, quote, well-coordinated, well-funded campaign by contrarian scientists, free market think tanks, and industry has created a paralyzing fog of doubt surrounding climate change. And, of course, they complain that these people are funded by the oil industry. One of the critics called back and said, well, at least we're not funded by government or taxes. You know. According to the authors, this denial machine has obstructed action against global warming and is still running at full throttle. There's real lots of hype. But as Washington Post Robert Samuelson noted wryly, the story was a wonderful read, marred only by it being fundamentally misleading. In both Newsweek and NBC Nightly News have been embarrassed by their distorted attacks on the critics. One of Newsweek's own editors went public with his embarrassment over the criticism of Newsweek's diatribe was highly contrived, he said, and fundamentally misleading. Believe me, it has to be pretty shoddy journalism for other media insiders to come out and publicly denounce this media juggernaut. What it does show is that there is a growing backlash from some in the public about the overwhelmingly one-sided debate. Now, just this week, the National Association of Manufacturers put out a note talking about how bad the egregious claims are getting about global warming. Veteran asbestos lawyer Gerald Maples readied his class action Mississippi-based litigation against oil companies for causing Katrina disaster. He said emissions equal climate change equals bad hurricanes equals class action lawsuits. In other words, he's blaming the hurricanes on emissions.
Well, I think
try to tie the oil companies. Isn't that incredible? But this is a real class action lawsuit, Dr. Stan, trying to hit the oil companies for blame for Katrina.
Well, I certainly, I'm no fan of the oil companies, but I hope they fight him and win and take him to the cleaners. Because this is just totally irresponsible on the part of this lawyer.
You know, even former Energy Department of Energy official Joseph Rahm blamed global warming this week for the Minneapolis bridge collapse because it had been too warm in Minnesota. Can you believe that?
I can believe almost anything. And, you know, everything you hear today, if it's cold, it's because of global warming.
Right. Global
if it's
warming,
hot, because it's global warming.
Right. If it's a hurricane, it's global warming. If it's a drought, it's global warming.
Well, we'll be back here in just a moment with Joel. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Joel, go right ahead.
You know, talking about James Hansen, the NASA scientist, he's the hero of the global warming crowd, he said, or NASA recalculated his figures and turned out that 1998 was not the warmest year on record he's been claiming, but it was 1934. Investors Business Daily is the full sad story of science being manipulated in the interest of political pursuits. But the media keeps crying, no, you must shut up. The debate is over. It's over. Nobody's allowed to take the contrarian position anymore.
Well, I'm just hoping, Joel, that at least there'll be some people out there who will see this and they'll say, you know, maybe it is that the entire media is wrong. And if the entire media is wrong, then maybe a lot of the things they're telling us are not true. And I just hope that somehow or other this whole scam, and it is a scam, it's a coordinated scam by people who have an agenda because, of course, global warming would lead to the Kyoto Protocol, and the Kyoto Protocol is an attack on the infrastructure of Western civilization to lower our living standards and require us to cut back our fossil fuel emissions something like 80% by the year 2050, and which would totally destroy the economy of the West. And they know that, and that's why people like Al Gore and the others want that. And I'm just hoping that people in the listening audience will understand that there's a coordinated effort to destroy basically Western civilization. And maybe they're going to say, hey, I don't want Western civilization destroyed. I like it. And maybe we better start thinking about what these people say about the control of the mass media and even my local newspaper and my local radio station. They're all controlled.
Well, you know, I do believe that there is a, in terms of the environment, it's not a destruction of the Western way of life agenda, but there is a control agenda. They want to use the crises in environmental to control private and public property. That's what the law of sea is all about. It's control. Now, the globalist agenda, on the other hand, is a destruction agenda. It's about destroying people, both population and the militaries of the West, to force us into a new world order. So there are multiple different levels of this agenda, depending on how hard you go up. But, you know, commenting on the public skepticism, one of the things that they've done is go too far in the environmental, in the shrillness of the fear-mongering. And that's why there's been such a backlash against the Newsweek article, is that it's becoming so obvious to so many people that this is overblown. So I think that we are winning, in fact, more people to the side of skepticism, no matter what they do in trying to debunk the 9/11 conspiracy theories and the 9/11 truth movement. It just keeps getting bigger. This week, the History Channel attempted to debunk the growing 9/11 truth movement. According to Stephen Paul Watts in the Prison Planet, the so-called documentary promises, what it promises is rife with bias, cronyism, and conflicts of interest. It does not look at the flaws in the official story from a neutral perspective, but starts out by suggesting that any deviation from the official line is outrageous. The program also features so-called independent experts who actually are in the employ of the program and makes themselves, rely on scores of multi-million-dollar contracts with the government and the military-industrial complex, and that's why they're certainly backing the government story. Pilots for 9/11 Truth, which I'm a member of, said the latest hit piece against the 9/11 Truth movement on the History Channel, was done in a fashion to introducing a claim followed by expert responses. The majority of expert responses were supplied by David Coburn and James Meigs of Popular Mechanics, which is owned by Hearst Publishing, which also owns part of the History Channel. And they've set a standard, the lowest standard, for yellow journalism. Replies from experts, quote, did not include any solid rebuttal. It's no surprise that the only experts they interviewed were titled as such when in support, meaning make excuses for the government story. Pilots for 9/11 Truth said the experts who questioned the government story were instead referred to as conspiracy nuts or conspiracy theorists and were either given very little airtime to present their research, which, as you know, requires more time than the generalizations that the debunkers throw out. To counter generalizations requires specifics, and that takes more time. So it's never even equal to give them equal time. The rebuttal always requires more time to rebut generalizations. But their rebuttals and details were edited out or were omitted from the program altogether. Pilots for 9/11 Truth, veterans for 9/11 Truth, and architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth were never contacted to present information for this program. He says, believe me, these professional organizations have solid forensic evidence that the official story is totally at variance with the facts.
What do you see, Joel? They cannot let the American people even suspect that somebody who could have been so crass and indifferent to human suffering that they would have allowed 3,000 Americans to have died unnecessarily on September 11th. If the American people suspected that, why, of course, they would never trust government stories or officials or official party line again. And it's not that there aren't a lot of wonderful people in the government. They just, you never get a chance to hear what they say or what they believe. And when they have the 9/11 Commission and they have 1,200 people testify, and 1,100 of those testimonies were never heard by the public and were sealed for 50 years, we know that they're covering something up.
Very good point. Now, we're probably not going to get through everything or even close to everything on the brief this week. If any of your listeners would like a sample copy of this week's brief, they can email me at editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. That's editor@worldaffairsbrief.com. Just say you'd like to have a one-time sample copy. There is a brief subscription fee or a modest subscription fee for the World Affairs Brief, which comes out every Friday. I do an in-depth analysis of the top news stories like we're doing now. And it's a good thing to help you keep up and to share with friends occasionally if you want to help them to understand what's really going on in the news.
That's certainly the most economical newsletter that we take, and it's certainly one of the better ones. It's one of the two that I read every single week from cover to cover.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. Next topic is the premeditated merger that's continuing between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. Just before President Bush left for his meeting with the Mexican and Canadian prime ministers in Montebello Resort in Quebec, he received a letter from 22 U.S. congressmen demanding that he openly detail to Congress what his administration has been doing in secret since the signing of the 2005 Security and Prosperity Partnership. As Jerome Corsi points out in World in Data, who's the top one and who's tracking this stuff, he says, these 22 members of Congress are urging the president to back off his North American integration efforts when he attends the third summit meeting on the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America. They make it clear that continuing any such agenda at this point would be disregarding the growing apprehension in Congress about these plans. Well, you know, it's very interesting that Judicial Watch did a Freedom of Information request to obtain the notes from the Pentagon attendees at the secret Banff meeting where the initial SPP meeting was held. One particularly disturbing comment was noted in the official conference record of speeches, recorded as the rapporteur notes, meaning reporting notes. In section 6 of the conference, entitled Border Infrastructure and Continental Prosperity, the reporter summarized as follows. To what degree does the concept of North American help slash hinder solving problems between the three countries? Vision is helpful, he said, the speaker said. A secure perimeter would bring enormous benefit. While a vision is appealing, working on the infrastructure might yield more benefit and bring more people aboard. So he's taking notes of what the speaker says. And then he puts in large letters and he says, evolution by stealth.
And that's just what it's all about. In other words, they're lying to us when they say that they don't want a North American Union. We've got a video of David Rockefeller back in 2002 giving a talk advocating a North American or American Union by 2005. Well, fortunately, of course, it didn't come about, but of course this is what they want. They just don't dare tell the American people because, you know, this would mean that these people are going to betray their oath of office, going to betray the Constitution, and destroy the sovereignty of our nation. And the American people don't want that. It's only the elite globalists who want that. And the last thing they want is for the American people to learn the truth.
Well, it's just like Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton said find that quote. He said it's very worrisome that the government is using evolution by stealth and talking about it openly in one of the meetings. He says, I have hesitation in accepting that our government is being honest about their proclamation. The embassy of the Canadian, U.S. Embassy in Canada put out a myth sheet about myths about the security partnership with Mexico, claiming it's not secret and that it's not a treaty and has no binding effect. Well, then what are they meeting in secret for?
That's a good question. If it's not a secret, then why are they keeping it a secret?
That's right.
And they have nothing to conceal. Why are they concealing it? And when are the American people going to wake up and understand there are people who have a different vision of the world because they hate individual freedom and they want, of course, a government controlled by a ruling elite like themselves?
You know, the members also of Congress also noted in their letter to the president, they reminded him that Duncan Hunter, Republican of California, added an amendment to the transportation funding bill prohibiting the use of federal funds to participate in any SPP-related working groups meeting in the future. But obviously this hasn't stopped the president from meeting up in Montebello, even though Congress has prohibited funds. He just appears to be above the law.
Well, I wonder if he's paying his own way and paying for Air Force One, paying the gas fee for that, but I bet he's not. And then who's going to hold him to it? I mean, most of the members of Congress are frightened to death because, of course, the FBI can come after them if they oppose the government. And even though they are elected representatives, they realize the power that centers within government to go after anybody they want to, irrespective of whether innocent or guilty.
Well, to show you how this is moving forward, U.S. Immigration and Customs, with the acronym ICE, is just plus the Border Patrol have just signed a new agreement with Mexican Customs, supposedly to increase cooperation about the U.S.-Mexican border. The problem with the signing is that all the details of what the administration plans to do under this agreement are secret. One thing for sure, the new agreement does not intend to increase enforcement. INS continues a Carter-era policy of not arresting illegals in this country. Michael Cutler, a former INS agent, writes for WorldNet Daily. Actually, it was News Reviews. And when Jimmy Carter was president and the INS was instructed by the administration to not permit special agents of the INS to make arrests unless the arrests were authorized at the upper management level. Can you imagine this bureaucracy? You're out there on a street beat, and you find someone, and you have to call in to get upper-level management approval to make the arrest. He said, as I recall, the local district office needed to seek authorization for any immigration arrest, either at the regional or the headquarters level. We were also discouraged from discussing this practice among our local office. Of course, the courts are in collusion with the administration's multicultural agenda to promote illegal immigration. An appeals court has just concluded that just being an illegal alien in the United States doesn't necessarily violate the law. Now, get this, Dr. Stan. This appeals court ruled that a judge cannot deny probation or require a jail sentence for a convicted drug dealer just because he's an illegal alien. The opinion from the Kansas Court of Appeals came in the Barton County case involving convicted drug dealer Nicholas Martinez. The ruling found that while the laws of the United States make it illegal to enter the United States without the authorization, being in the United States after entering illegally is not a crime. In other words, if you can make it through, what does this telegraph to the illegal community? Once you make it over the border, you're legal.
Well, we live in a world gone mad. You would think, though, if he was a drug dealer, he could be convicted of being a drug dealer.
But he cannot be denied bail with the additional charge that he's an illegal alien and there's a flight risk. It can't be taken into consideration. That's just incredible, Dr.
But, of course, I think the thing is the American people must understand there is an agenda. They don't want to stop illegal immigration. They do not want us to be a sovereign nation. They want us to be a multicultural, multilingual nation so that they can play one group against the other. That's the oldest game in the world. The black against the Hispanic, the Hispanic against the white, you know, the Asian against everybody else. Who knows? You have to have a cohesive nation. You have to have one language, because if you have multiple languages, why, of course, you're going to have conflict. And they want conflict and chaos. It should be so obvious to any thinking person.
Well, if that doesn't beat all, now Homeland Security, as if it has got all of our own security problems wrapped up, is starting to make security liaison with all the Latin American countries. If that's not biting off more than you can chew.
And they're even talking now about, they have so much trouble with drugs down in Mexico. Maybe we're going to have to send the American military down there, help the Mexican control the drugs. Hey, what happens? We can't even control what's going on over in Afghanistan and Iraq. Why would we want to be sending our troops into Mexico?
Excellent point. Well, one last story I want to comment on. Agent provocateurs have been discovered at the Montebello protests. Protest organizers at the SPP meeting in Montebello, Quebec, have definitive evidence that three masked protesters were police agents intent on provoking violence so that the police would have an excuse to attack demonstrators. Here's what the Canadian press said. Quote, a video posted on YouTube shows three young men, their faces masked by bandanas, mingling Monday with protesters in front of a line of police in riot gear. At least one of the masked men is holding a rock in his hand. The three are confronted by protest organizer, this is all on video, David Coles, president of the Communications, Energy, and Paper Workers of Canada. Coles makes it clear to the masked men they're not welcome among his group of protesters, whom he describes as many grandparents. He urges them to leave and to find their own protest location. Cole also demands they put down their rocks. And other protesters begin to chime in that the three are really police agents. Several try to snatch the bandanas from their faces to expose who they are. But rather than leave, the three actually go closer to the police line, engage in a conversation with the police, and then the police or they push their way past an officer, whereby the other police jump on them and handcuff them. So late Tuesday, photographs were taken by another protester that surfaced showing the trio was lying prone on the ground being handcuffed by the, police, and the soles of their boots have the yellow triangle of police boots in Canada.
Well, of course, it's the oldest trick in the world. And, of course, you know, they have their agents infiltrating certainly every group in America, whether it be the Christian groups, the conservative groups, you know, any organization will be infiltrated. And, of course, then if they can get these people to commit atrocities, why, you've tended to discredit those groups. It's a technique as old as time, isn't it?
It is.
And certainly we've seen this with all sorts of tyrants. This is how, of course, you get the people behind you saying, look at those people out there. If you don't back me, why, the bad guys are going to take over. Well, Joel, you go right ahead. We've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I think it's interesting that these were the only three to show up with masks, and they're very typical, like the Seattle riots. The ones who started breaking windows and set up were all dressed in black with black ski masks on.
Right.
And nobody in the protesters knew who they were.
In fact, we have a wonderful 4-tape set called The Battle in Seattle that goes into this whole incredible story of how that whole thing was set up from the very beginning, and those people in the ninja suits were obviously agent provocateurs.
Yes, indeed.
And that was to discredit the legitimate people who were there concerned about the globalist implications of the meeting in Seattle.
Well, certainly they used that excuse to use some horrendous new weapons on people, and that's half of the excuse. It's not so much to give them, it's not only to give the protesters a bad name, but also to practice riot techniques. They have to have somebody to hit upon in order to practice their new electronic devices, their new stun guns, their new mace, and many other things that they have brought to the scene expecting and provoking, you know, great violence. Well, turning to Iraq, Dr. Stan, the big name of the game now is the blame game on al-Maliki. A chorus of U.S. officials have begun calling for the replacement of Prime Minister al-Maliki, U.S.-backed puppet in Iraq, to divert attention, of course, away from continuing U.S. failure in Iraq. U.S. regional commanders in Iraq have no business making excuses for U.S. policy, let alone claiming that their supposed military achievements of the surge are being undermined by the political failures of Prime Minister al-Maliki. Even Carl Levin, the Democratic chairman of the Armed Service Committee, was the worst, declaring the al-Maliki government non-functional. He added, I hope Parliament will vote the al-Maliki government out of office and will have the wisdom to replace it with a less sectarian and more unifying prime minister and government. Well, yep. These kinds of statements are extremely unwise.
Well, because al-Maliki said, look, why don't you just get up and leave my country? Why don't you get out of our country and let us solve the problems? And that's the last thing we want. We want to get rid of the guy who wants us to get out.
Well, of course, he never comes that strongly about that. He's saying, you know, well, we've got other friends elsewhere if you don't want to be our friends. Where he says, you know, we're ready anytime you're ready to leave. But he never comes out and formally asks the government to leave, even though, you know, he could quote President Bush saying, we will leave anytime the government leaves. And he could say, we are formally asking you to leave now. That would make headlines across the world. And it would make a lie of the Americans' claim that the Iraqi government is sovereign.
But I don't think it would be very good for Mr. Maliki's health. We're out of time, Joel. Anyway, thank you so very much. We'll look forward to talking to your guest tomorrow morning. Thank you so very much.
My pleasure.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. And, of course, if you'd like to, I'd like to see this 4-tape set we have on what happened in Seattle. It's called The Battle in Seattle, and we talked to people who are actually there. And these provocateurs, or these agent provocateurs, were working for the very government, and they were there to discredit the people who were concerned about the globalist implications of these people of great wealth want to destroy our nation. So it's an excellent 4-tape set made of information you're not going to get elsewhere. The Battle in Seattle 4-tape and 4-CD set, I recommend it to you. And then, of course, we hope many of you, if you really want to understand what this is all about, will get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, my talk. the Forbidden Secret, the four tape or four CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret, which gets into the background of what Rhonda Byrne is doing, and of course the force that she is tapping into. This law of attraction that will allow you to manipulate the world with your mind. What they don't tell you is you're tapping into the other dimension. And if you'd like to get our material on the supernatural, why, of course, we've got great material on spiritual warfare, a book on spiritual warfare, a book, The Gods Who Walk Among Us, a new book we're carrying called Stargate, and we urge you to get these books to understand what is really going on. Certainly, Johanna Michelson's excellent book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, and, of course, our interviews, taped interviews, four taped interviews with Johanna Michelson and another gentleman who writes on world Satanism. There really are people out there who worship Satan, and we have a book on satanic crimes. But right now I just want to mention that we were talking today with the people from Ready Reserve Food, where, of course, we like people to go to lay in their food supplies, and they're having difficulty getting food. It's getting in short supply. They're having difficulty getting milk and milk products. But one of the biggest things is, of course, that so much of the food now is genetically modified. Literally all the corn out there is genetically modified that you're going to be able to get today. And, of course, it's in all your tortillas, and anything that's manufactured with corn today is genetically modified. It's not fit for the animals. We know with the animal studies that what's happened to their fertility, and of course, many animals have been fed these diets have died. And yet they're putting it in all of your corn. Well, other things they're having difficulty getting today. And if you're going to lay in a supply of food, emergency food, which we recommend, do it now while the food is still available. And so if you'd like to get a catalog, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. But if you're one of the hundreds of people out there who have a catalog and just put it aside, do not wait. I mean, I got a call today from a former FBI agent who said it's only a matter of time before they stage a terrorist attack in America. And he said stage it. Not that the terrorists are going to come, but they need an attack, of course, to have more government control over the lives of the people. And it's the oldest technique in the world, the same technique they used at the battle in Seattle. So don't put off making your preparations. Do you have your water filters? Do you have your water barrels? Do you have the pumps you're going to need, the grinders? And we have, of course, books like going into the background of how to basically, look after yourself in case there's an emergency. And if you'd like to get the material, certainly Making the Best of Basics, we think, is an excellent book. And it just tells you how to live if you don't have all the great things that we're used to. And, of course, you should not be getting prepared food at the grocery store, because most of that has the things in it which are poisonous to you, like MSG, like aspartame and NutraSweet, like the genetically modified food. You're going to have to start eating independent foods. We're going to have Jeffrey Smith on. Those of you who did not get to listen to Jeffrey Smith yesterday need to get the copy of that. We'll be putting together a new four-tape set. We already have one four-tape set on genetically modified food. They're poisoning you. They're poisoning your children with aspartame, mercury, fluoride, and now with genetically modified food. Pray for America. Pray for revival. And our number, remember, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. We are under attack today. Thank you so much.